Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and welcome to our last media talk proper of 2009, coming up. Just when the BBC press office thought it could sign off for Christmas, the World Service asks, should homosexuals be executed? Media Talk asks, whose head should roll? Also in the podcast, ITV claims the ratings crown for 2009. We offer Director of Programming Peter Fincham our sincerest apologies. And, never mind the bankers, the Daily Telegraph brings back its staff Christmas bonus. Plus...
And now a very special person is in the room.
This is a very strange moment for me, Terry.
No, come on.
It is. I used to be a trolley boy at a supermarket in Birchwood in Warrington, and I used to listen to you on Radio 2. And now I'm here sat opposite you on the day before you leave. This is madness. This is crazy.
Terry Wogan prepares to sign off from the Radio 2 breakfast show. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, Olay have been criticised for airbrushing the wrinkles off Twiggy in his latest ad campaign, but I can assure all of you in Podland that my two panellists are fresh-faced and fruity enough not to require any photoshopping at all. Stephen Brook is Media Guardian's press and publishing correspondent, and John Plunkett is our radio man. And my big question to you chaps is, X Factor Joe or Rage Against the Machine? Plunkett?
Rage Against the Machine.
Thought as much. Brookie, you're your own show man, aren't you?
Yeah. Ain't about how fast I get there, ain't about what's waiting on the other side, it's the climb.
Excellent.
I bought it.
Is that what you were downloading last night? Right, we'll come on to the X Factor and Rage Against the Machine later in the show, but let's start this week with a rather divisive story at the BBC. It began with a webpage on BBC Online which posed the rather stark question, should homosexuals face execution? Now, this was intended as a prompt for debate on the World Service call-in programme Africa Have Your Say about a proposed bill in Uganda that would result in harsh punishment for gays, including the death sentence. Now, the webpage naturally caused outrage, but the programme went ahead. Here's a clip.
Hi there, and welcome to what is no doubt one of the toughest Have Your Say debates we have ever done. I'm Alex Jacana, and today we are discussing the anti-homosexuality bill being debated on Friday by the Ugandan parliament. As it is now, the bill proposes life imprisonment for a homosexual act, with the death sentence being imposed in some cases. In other words, a democratically elected parliament is considering whether homosexuals should actually face execution. I can assure you it has sparked heated debate here in the BBC, as well as online and out there in the Twitter world. So I suspect, and I rather expect, it will be no different on air today.
I'm a Christian by religion, and Christianity advocates for... It doesn't advocate for violence or for killing each other. That's not what it says. But again, when you look at the act of homosexuality, it's shameful. It's immoral. I'm listening to the other lady speak, and my heart is... I can't even describe the feeling. I can almost cry because I don't understand how a human would look at... how me, a female, would look at a female in a sexual way. It's just not right.
To what extent have the homosexuals, through the gay and lesbian coalition, been extreme in their drive to recruit young boys and girls in schools in Uganda? If we say democratically elected MPs being behind the push, who do they represent? And we have to look at those people as people representing the majority, and they represent not only the people, but inclusive of their morals and culture.
Sometimes you just wonder, Stephen Brook, how did these things happen? How did nobody think about that headline before the web page was published? Because you only have to think about it, as far as I can tell, for a second before you realise how outrageous and how outrageously offensive it is.
And how many people are going to be absolutely furious about it, as I was when I saw it, and as was the person in the BBC who phoned me up and said, you must write about this. And then two people from The Guardian, after word went out on Twitter, came down.
Well, you and I were one of them.
You were one of them. Stormed, I've outed you. You stormed out. It's a story.
Yeah, because you were going to do a diary story about it. And I said, no, it's an actual story.
And then highly unusually, at least in my journalistic career, I got a text from a friend very late at night. Thank you for writing this story. I can't believe the BBC has done this. Hmm. And I am going to be complaining tomorrow to them and to Ofcom, etc., etc.
That's our outrage got over with. What was the background to the story, Stephen?
Basically, the story was about the Ugandan government legislation that's going to be debated in Parliament this week about incredibly harsh punishments towards homosexual people. And they're talking about years in prison up to execution for people caught committing homosexual acts. This is a big topic and, you know, is worthy of a current affairs program investigating. So allied to that, the World Service put up a posting on their Have Your Say blog that goes everywhere and decided to put the stark headline, Should Homosexuals Be Executed? ?
Yeah, that was the headline on the webpage.
That was their original headline on the webpage. The talk board then was promoting the program, which went out this week on Wednesday at 4 p.m. And it's a pre-moderated talk board, and they invited everyone to discuss this forthcoming legislation with, you know, predictable consequences. So the posts that went on there were pretty, you know, out of this world.
Well, I've got some of them here. Yeah. David in Uganda, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. What the Ugandan parliament is doing is to protect the traditional moral heritage of its people. The backstabbers, as gays are sometimes described, can best be described as social misfits who need to be isolated permanently between four walls. Chris in Guildford said, totally agree, ought to be imposed in the UK too. Bring back some respectable family values. Why do we have to suffer gay pride festivals? He goes on to say, I suggest all gays are put on a remote island somewhere and left for a generation, after which theoretically there should be none left. Aaron in Freetown, bravo to the Ugandans for this wise decision, a bright step in eliminating this menace from your society. We hope other African nations will also follow your bold step. Bearing in mind these are pre-moderated comments.
Yeah, so what was the BBC thinking? Yeah. I mean, I generally in these discussions try and come down on the side of free speech. Hmm. But to be confronted by that bold, stark headline, as if it was even up for debate, I think was a lot of the reason why people got so outraged. And there's been complaints to Ofcom, BBC, the PCC, after people from the BBC, who are part of the BBC Pride gay and lesbian group, made representations to the producers of the program. The headline was changed. You know, it's all blown up now, hasn't it? It's gone way up into the BBC hierarchy.
Totally. John Plunkett, I mean, it's fair, isn't it, that the, as Stephen says, that the BBC should debate this, you know, what to Western ears and eyes is quite a shocking bill. But in Uganda, it's going to happen. So you know, isn't it right that they should debate such a controversial issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary news story, and it is of interest and certainly, you know, worthy of investigation. But what it required, I think, was context. And they completely missed that with that headline.
Because there was, I mean, they say that there was context because the next few paragraphs gave it context. The problem is, it's very difficult to get past that headline, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they had just inserted two words, Uganda asks, : should gays be executed?
Yes.
Then they would have.
We ask.
Yeah. Should they would have, so much of the outrage that they've generated by this would have gone away. Mm. The other problem was with the pre-moderated discussion, because they clearly wanted, i.e. in Uganda, there are homophobic people there, and they wanted them to be able to have their say and engage with the Ugandan gays and lesbians who are there and did participate in the program, which is...
I listened to the whole program.
I did too.
Yeah, and it was very interesting, because all of the people who called in were all in favour of the law. The only people who were against it were gay Africans whom the BBC had lined up in preparation.
Yeah, exactly. Which in itself points to the merit of doing the program. Mm. And I can see that the producers, they realised that us here in London would be completely shocked by the headline. But you're right, it is the reality for those people.
We tried to get somebody from the BBC to come on Media Talk, actually, to respond to this, but no one was available. But this is what David Stead, the editor of Africa Have Your Say, wrote on his blog.
The editors of the BBC Africa Have Your Say program thought long and hard about using this question, which prompted a lot of internal debate. We agree that it's a stark and challenging question, but think that it accurately focuses and illustrates the real issue at stake. This issue has already sparked much debate around the world and understandably led to us receiving many emails and texts. We have sought to moderate these rigorously while at the same time trying to reflect the varied and hugely diverse views about homosexuality in Africa.
What do you think about that, John?
Well, I think the fact that they've now changed it and they changed the headline to "Should Uganda Debate Gay Execution" suggests that they've admitted that they made an error of judgment and they got it wrong. But they said that they only did it after several hours of a long and hard discussion within the BBC. So I think I hate to use the word, but it brings up the word compliance again. Who approved it and where did the debate go and how did this error happen, which they appear to admit
it
was an error?
And they realise that by merely asking the question, they were allowing the BBC to become a platform for hate. Mm. This is a problem for an international news organisation that is based in London trying to fit in with Uganda. It's trying to be a program for Ugandans where that question is obviously by the people on the program. They regard there as being immoral equivalents on both
between
sides
the views,
of the argument.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem, John. This is the issue that's raised by the network world, because you can't have a web page that's just for the people in Africa. It appears on the World Have Your Say part of the BBC website with a bbc.co.uk URL with the BBC News branding on the top. Twitter gets involved and the link is sent around the world. So things get taken out of context in this networked world, don't they?
That's right. It became almost a UK-based debate. And I think most of them, a great majority of the commenters were people from the UK.
Yeah.
I think on a slightly lighter note, I did quite enjoy one of the comments on Stephen's story in response to the suggestion that, all gays should be sent to a desert island and left there. So someone wrote, "Really? When can we go? Sounds like great fun."
Sounds like a pitch for a reality show, doesn't it?
Fire Island or something.
And why should they?
This is also something about Twitter, which I am growing increasingly kind of despondent about, because the end result of this, more people are outraged by a headline on a BBC website than this horrific looming legislation in Uganda and these poor people, some of whom were featured in the program, just about the difficulties of being gay or lesbian in Uganda and, the risks they now face. I just look at all these Twitter outrages, with Hanchett and Moyer and the BNP, and I think, look, somebody's written something that's offended a whole group of people. Mm. But look, at the end of the day, nobody's died.
Well, some people might. But that's the point.
Uganda, people are going to die. Well, but what the focus of the fury has been about has been at the BBC and this program rather than The Guardian has been reporting about Uganda for months and, an outrageous situation, but no Twitter outrage to mirror it.
Okay, well, it shows that it's quite a multi-layered story and it's not as straightforward as it first might seem.
But we're just trapped in this little digital world of our blogs and websites and, the real world is out there and happening and bad things are happening in there, and perhaps we should be turning our attention to that more.
So, after all that, I feel rather bad about the question that we asked at the top of the program is, should heads roll? And we're talking about heads of the BBC, obviously. The BBC always wrings its hands and, somebody will get carpeted and wrapped over the knuckles and nothing further will happen, probably.
Well, I think the great way to deal with it possibly would be for World Have Your Say to it, so return to the topic next week and bring this up and say World Have Your Say about World Have Your Say. And okay. Possibly, if it's not too complicated, have a listener vote.
So long as, John, they don't charge a premium rate.
That's right, yes.
Rate for that. Great stuff. Thank you very much. We'll leave that there. More about this at mediaguardian.co.uk. Okay, on now to broadcasting, because it's a case of trebles all round at ITV Towers. ITV1 had 6 out of the 10 most watched programmes of 2009. The final of Britain's Got Talent proved the most popular show of the year, with 18.3 million people tuning in. Other big hitters included The X Factor, of course, which destroyed its BBC One Saturday night rival Strictly Come Dancing, and Doc Martin, which proved even more popular than Doctor Who. I know, because I watch both of them. I like Doc Martin.
Why? I don't know why I like it.
Maybe I don't know why.
I had a very fondly remembered family holiday in Cornwall once, but I just like it.
Are you a Doc Martin fan, Josh?
I'm similar, yeah. You don't know why you like it. I know why I don't like it.
Right.
Which is, I just find the Doc Martin character, Martin Clune's character, utterly unappealing. He's just, absolutely miserabilist, and I just don't get it,
Yeah, I agree, but I still want to watch an hour of him on Sunday night.
I've got to stare at a postcard of St. Ives.
Yes, I have to say, we have bad-mouthed ITV plenty on this podcast before.
I've stood up for the Bill and Heartbeat, to general derision.
Can I offer you, Brookie, a slice of humble pie?
Yeah, but you better, pop one in the post to Peter Fincham, I think. It was interesting, because ITV had its Christmas drinks for Germany. journos a week or so ago, and the spring in the step was really quite noticeable from a lot of the directors and executives of the various divisions who sometimes turn up to these events and sometimes don't. But a lot of them were there and up for a chat. I think we talked earlier in the podcast about whether this ITV content-led revival, to use Michael Grade's favourite phrase, has any depth to it, or whether it's just Simon Cowell and Ant and Dec. And I think from these figures from Tara Conlon's story, ITV would be especially pleased by the top 10 new dramas, because there they dominated that category as well, having, I think, 7 out of the top 10 new dramas this year that were new series that hadn't been seen before. Shows like Whitechapel, Collision, Murderland, and the BBC were the sort of cellar dwellers with Hope Springs, Hunter and Life of Riley, which were in positions 8 to 10. So I think from that we can see that, yes, they are doing far, far better than they were this time a year ago.
So is it all down, John, to Peter Fincham, their genial and well-liked director of programmes?
Well, I think it's Fincham's magic touch, yeah. I think it is, yeah. They've got it's a good mixture. You know, you've got the big studio shows, you've got the dramas, and also Benidorm, which they persevered with, which maybe a few years ago would have got the axe, but now they get 6 million odd viewers across an hour, which is...
I have to endure that in our house. I have to say, I'm not a fan, but I can see why it goes down well.
Certainly. I mean, BBC One would love to have an hour-long comedy that gets 6 million viewers at 9 o'clock. Some of their shows that, like Have I Got News For You, for instance, in a similar slot, don't rate as well as they used to now. Neither is QI, since it went from 2 to 1. I think what ITV needs is a decent panel show, or a couple of decent panel shows, because that would really shore up their offering, I think. And they've struggled to get that. Yeah.
Yes. I think, you know, to be fair to ITV, and ruthlessly fair to Fincham, a lot of these elements were in place before he appeared on the scene.
I'm a Celebrity, Britain's Got Talent, Dancing on Ice, didn't commission any of those.
Yeah, but what he is very good is at managing people and a network, and I think that you can say there are far fewer duds in the ITV1 schedule under Fincham, shows like The Palace and Moving Wallpaper, than under his previous reign. So he does, I think, you know, timing plays a part in this, but also he's just got that sort of yes and no ability to make things that are good better, but also to...
Yes, because, I mean, you know, John, and I know you follow X Factor closely.
Big fan, yeah.
It's been a terrific series. I mean, and this is a show that is relatively mature now, but I think this series kind of eclipsed in its production values and the way it was presented and the way it was scheduled, even though the talent weren't as particularly fantastic as previous series.
Yeah, inferior, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they took two risks in the sense that they split it over Saturday and Sunday night, and they took another risk, an expensive risk, by doing the auditions in front of the live audience, and people maybe at the very start turned their noses up. But it's been a massive hit. You know, it gets 14, 15 million viewers Saturday and Sunday for I don't know how many weeks, 10 weeks.
Yeah, certainly on the blogs, people are agreeing. Wonderblog on Media Guardian said, you might not like X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, but you can't just dismiss them as crap quality. The production values are world class, which you'd know if you'd spent 10 minutes watching primetime television in any other country, including the US. Yes, they are basically karaoke contests and end of the pier talent shows, but they're bloody well made ones. That's what he says. Still, though, the BBC will dominate Christmas, won't they, John? Have you had your Radio Times out? Have you been?
I have. Yeah, I got my
thumbing through the Christmas edition.
I got my marker pen. I got confused and ringed them on the EPG. So I've got to go and buy a new TV. But actually, my Skybox broke yesterday, so I had to read a book.
Ooh, Kel DeMar.
So yeah. I found a book eventually.
Did you?
And sat down to read it, but I lost concentration. I've got a few. Particularly looking forward to Russell, Steve Coogan, The Inside Story, which is like a sort of a spoof doc with presented by Vic and Bob, which could go one of either way. I think
I've not even heard of that one.
Which channel is that? I've not heard of
that BBC Two. Right, Steve Coogan, Inside Story.
Okay,
and also the remake of Day of the Triffids is flicking my switch. With,
yes, that'll
be Dougray Scott, Eddie Izzard, Jodie Richardson, John Plunkett. Okay. I'm the fourth. Fourth plant from the left, but it's up against, which is unfortunate scheduling, Englishman in New York with John Hurt, which...
Well, that's what your Sky Plus is for.
Back to my book.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to the Triffids. Also looking forward to My Family 2039.
Oh, no.
In which, this is brilliant. It's a Christmas oddity, yes, where the Harpers gather to celebrate Christmas, but memories of seasonal disasters past prevail.
Oh, God.
So I'm looking forward to some really good makeup to make... Robert Lindsay and Zoe Wanamaker look older. It's brilliant. Ooh. Burning the turkey. Like,
will they be teleporting in, I wonder?
The Christmas tree fell over. Well, oh, more socks for Christmas.
God, you can just tell it now.
8 million viewers.
Yeah, talking about teleporting Doctor Who, though, that's going to be fab.
Yeah. I think I went to a BAFTA do with Russell T. Davies and Julie Gardner, who are the departing executive producers.
I just need to pick up those names from the floor that Stephen just dropped. There we are. I got them. Thanks. Good. On you
sorry,
go.
Sorry, I didn't realise that was part of the show. Who were keeping very tight-lipped about the whole finale, but you can just tell that they're going to attempt to make it as spectacular as possible. I wonder whether they're going to refloat an idea that was first around during the John Pertwee era, the Third Doctor, where there's a big climax which involves the death of the Master in an explosion, triggering the regeneration of the Doctor. But, you know, I did read in my Christmas Radio Times that the reviewer blubbed all the way through it. Yeah. So, sounds like it could be very sad.
I'm Matt Wells. You're listening to Media Talk. Now, it's the end of the year, so there are plenty of bitty stories around, it has to be said. Let's start our news in brief section with The Telegraph, Stephen. And bonus scandal there? Expenses scandal at The Telegraph? No. It's quite good.
Bonus Christmas joy. I think this is a good news story if you happen to work at the Telegraph Media Group. And, you know, we can only look on in envy, can't we? £500. The Barclays are very keen on end-of-year bonuses, and they didn't have one last year during the whole media downturn. But they've reinstituted it this year, and partly they're saying, and I saw another name drop, Will Lewis, the other week. And he was saying, look, we took all the very painful decisions early. We've cut out a lot of the costs. And this year, he says they're going to make a bigger profit at the company than they did last year, which in these straitened times is pretty good going and is the reason why the Christmas bonus has been reinstituted.
Twiggygate, John, do we care about this advertising scandal that Olay have been touching up her photographs to make their effect of their eye cream look better?
Yes, that's right. They made Twiggy look 14. In the advert, which raised suspicions. But yeah, it's extraordinary. Yeah. I think they called it minor photoshopping. It looks pretty major to me.
In other news, Sir George Russell is stepping down from the ITV board, airbrushed out of history. Stephen Brooke, will they miss his experience? They won't, will they? That board has been worse than useless. It's about time some of them stepped
in. When you've got Archie Norman, why do you need George Russell or any of those other old-timers? I mean, the guy is officially not starting as chairman until January, but you can just tell that he's already been in there like a rocket and is sorting that whole thing out. So, no, I think, you know, George Russell probably quite instrumental in getting Archie Norman on board or even Michael Grade, but, you know, there's big, big changes at ITV coming down the train. Lines.
Yeah. And we should also, you can hear I'm rustling a copy of The Sun here. This is, we should mention this story about Jonathan Ross. Was, I'll accept a £3 million loss. Jonathan Ross has accepted a massive 50% pay cut, slashing his salary by £3 million, says The Sun. But inevitably, when you read down these stories, you find that actually he's clearly in contract his contract is up for negotiation. And there's no suggestion that a new contract has been signed. Do you think, John Plunkett, that actually what's happening here is that he's afraid that he might get dropped?
Yeah, it's all absolutely. It's all part of the negotiations. I understand that the meeting, there was a sort of informal, unofficial meeting took place on Tuesday this week,
right,
probably at TV Centre, between Ross's people and the BBC's people. And this kind of first offer was put on the table. But I guess the big question is a 50% pay cut enough? It sounds generous on the surface, but, you know, it's down to his last £3 million.
Yes.
And maybe
exactly.
Thompson will be looking for him to take a bigger pay cut.
I think that they're seriously considering at the BBC whether they need even to re-sign him at all. I mean, that's clear from the story.
Don't need him. What do they need him for? They don't need him. They have got people who could slot in to all those programs he does on TV and radio quite happily.
Graham Norton show's doing pretty well on BBC One. Weird show this week I saw with Robert Downey Jr.
I didn't see that, no.
He looked overexcited to be there.
Oh, really? Interesting. Excellent stuff. We'll leave that there. You can keep up to date with Jonathan Ross's salary negotiations and all the rest of the media stories at mediaguardian.co.uk, where you'll also find our magnificent end-of-year quiz. And we can't leave the section without saying... without getting a word from our sponsors, I believe there's a new iPhone app available this week. Have you heard about this, John?
Yeah, I saw it.
This has passed to your radar at all?
Yeah, I saw a demo of it online, which was a very good professional voiceover.
It was.
I don't know who did that.
I have no idea.
Fantastic hand model as well. I particularly was thrilled for like 2 seconds. You could see one of my stories up on the demonstration.
I should explain. This is the new Guardian iPhone app, available at £2.39. A snip in the iPhone store. Hurry while stocks last. onto the radio now. Two stalwarts are winding up their acts in preparation for big schedule changes at Radio 2 and 5 Live in the new year. John, have you been waking up to Wogan with a tear in your eye this week?
Well, I've been making the most of his last week on the breakfast show, yes. It's the big finale on Friday, and I'm sure there won't be a dry mic in the house. I imagine a few fellow DJs will make an appearance, and very possibly he might overrun his 9:30 slot. Chris Evans was on the show this morning. A little preview, but I think the BBC are doing everything they possibly can to make it as smooth a handover as possible and hold the hand of those togs who have the fear at waking up to Evans. They might think of a better name for the show.
Waking up to Evans, Chris. Yes. Early morning Evans.
I think it could be good.
Chris, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a real rival in the Plunkett household with BBC Radio 4's Today, so I'll be switching between the two. And a bit of 5 Live.
How will you manage in the mornings?
You just have a different one on in every house.
I was just going to say,
flip from one to the other.
You can wake up to Chris Evans in bed, can't you? And then you can have 5 Live on in the kitchen when you're making a coffee.
Yeah, and
Radio
4 in the
Radio 4 in the shower, I think.
Yeah. I like to shower with Evan Davis.
Yes, absolutely. Don't we all? Mayo, obviously, is finishing.
Mayo, yeah. Well, you know, his move to Drive Time on Radio 2 has sort of been entirely overshadowed by the...
Eclipsed.
By the Evans-Wogan roadshow. So, I mean, in a way, that takes the pressure off because Evans is going to be a hugely difficult task difficult act, I should say, to follow because there's so much energy and it's so lively and there's so much fun in the show, which, you know, Mayo's a great broadcaster.
But he's
necessarily
not. He's completely
energy.
Different.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, absolutely different.
Perhaps Radio 2 are thinking if there's enough energy, quite enough energy going on in the morning, perhaps it's time for a bit of a change at prime time. We should finish this section on radio with a spectacular boo for 5 Live. Rage Against the Machine, who, of course, are being promoted as a rival to Joe McElderry from The X Factor for the Christmas number one. They were asked to play their song Killing in the Name live on The Breakfast Show. Editorial eyebrows may, however, have been raised about the wisdom of this, of playing this song. It has, of course, 16, and we've counted them, so you don't have to, consecutive declarations of fuck you, I won't do what you tell me at the end of the song. What could possibly have gone wrong at 5 minutes to nine?
I won't do what you tell me. I won't do what you tell me. I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Sorry, we needed to get rid of that because that suddenly turned into something we were not... we were expecting it and asked them not to do it and they did it anyway. So by Joe's records, it's 3 minutes past nine.
Sheila Fogarty.
Get rid of it! Press the button!
What a pro.
Well, yeah, I'm amazed it took four goes to kill it. But yeah, by Joe's record instead. So yeah, he's guaranteed the Christmas number one, surely, with Fogarty behind him.
Absolutely.
Well, because you know what, Ofcom like an immediate apology if there's been any swearing that they've said in previous reports. So if you ever got a bit of naughty swearing that was unexpected on your radio program, immediate apology and then one at the end of the program again, and Ofcom seems to be satisfied by that. But what is the BBC doing promoting
this? I can see you getting outraged
this
again.
Kind of anti-Simon Cowell push they're on,
yeah,
isn't it? Have they had Dear Nice Sweet Joe on Radio 5 Live in the mornings? Probably not this week.
Yeah, maybe not. Thank you very much. Just enough time to squeeze in what we've learnt this week as we trundle to the end of another podcast. Stephen, you've carefully scripted your ad lib, haven't you?
I haven't carefully scripted it, but I have thought about what I'm going to say. Embarrassingly enough, now I've now forgotten the name of one of the key protagonists, who is the editor of the Daily Telegraph.
Ian McGregor.
No, he's Tony editor of the Sunday.
Tony Gallagher.
Yeah, Tony Gallagher's new favourite swear word.
Thank you very much. Ben Green off mic there. Yes.
Thanks, producer Ben. As you know, if you're a newspaper editor in the Paul Dacon mode, you've got to have a swear word that you trot out at staff.
Oh, do you? Right. Yeah, well, yeah. You have to have a particular one that's unique to you.
Well, yeah. You know, Dacres is the C word. Yeah. Can't bring myself to say it on air in case my parents are listening, which he, you know, likes to freely trot out and about. And apparently Gallagher's one, which I learned about because...
I'm apologising in advance for this one, Ofcom, so, here we go.
It was uttered when Andrew Pearce went up and said, Tony, I'm leaving, I've got a job at the Mail. To which Tony Gallagher replied, you cocksucker. To which Andrew Pearce deliciously said, yes, actually, Tony, I am.
Very good. Tom Plunkett, what have you been finding out for us this week?
Well, in the absence of my Skybox, as well as reading a book, I switched on the DVD and dug out my Michael Palin box set. And,
did you really?
I went through Hemingway's Adventure. So it was most enjoyable. It did look of its time. It was very slow. There were lots of sort of comedy setups. It was definitely entertainment rather than a straight ahead documentary. But it reminded me, because Palin came very low in that Daily Mail, in the BBC list of stars. And
we didn't get around to that, but it was on my list of possible discussion topics. Sadly, we passed
over. He was in the bottom.
He was a cellar dweller, yes. He came towards the bottom and said, I think the phrase they used was occasional sparkle. But, you know, he was sparkling good and proper on Hemingway's Adventure.
Very good. I can
recommend it.
Bring back. Yeah, you wouldn't have any trouble with Michael Palin, would you? Bring back Palin. That'll sort them out. Very good. Thank you very much to Stephen Brook and John Plunkett. They'll be back in our year-end review, which can be downloaded on Christmas Eve. In fact, we're just about to record the links. So we're going to have to put our Christmas hats on and pretend that it's Christmas.
Pass those mince pies.
Post your comments on this week's show at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or look for us on Twitter and Facebook. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. Thanks for listening.